Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Kelly Jean Kelly, Brian Lynn, and Katie Weaver. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Kelly Jean Kelly.
The United Nations Refugee Agency reported Tuesday that nearly 69 million people were displaced last year. Each of the last 5 years has set a record. This year's number tops all of them. The UN estimates that about 44,000 people become refugees every day. They are fleeing war, violence, and other attacks. Some have fled or been removed from their countries many times. The top UN official for refugees, Filippo Grandi, said crises in South Sudan, Congo, and Myanmar raised the number of refugees in 2017. Grandi also said that some people believe rich countries are having a refugee crisis. He said that is not true. He said UN data show that 85% of refugees are from developing countries. Many of those areas are desperately poor, he said. The country that has the highest number of refugees is Turkey. Most refugees there come from Syria. The United States received the most new individual applications for asylum last year. Germany received the second most. Jan Egeland leads the Norwegian Refugee Council. He said, countries are not working together to take responsibility for refugees. Rich countries are building walls against families fleeing war, at the same time as less money is available for aid to people in conflict areas, he said. Egeland also urged countries to be more like Uganda, a country he described as generous toward refugees. It receives refugees and protects them, he said. World Refugee Day is Wednesday, June 20th. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
A major study carried out in Norway suggests IQ scores among men there have been falling since the mid-1970s. The study involved more than 700,000 men born in Norway between 1962 and 1991. The research was carried out by Oslo's Ragnar Frisch Center for Economic Research. Results were published last week in the U.S.-based scientific journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. The men were given tests around age 18 to measure IQ, or intelligence quotient, as part of required military service in Norway. IQ tests are designed to measure intelligence based on areas such as vocabulary knowledge, verbal and nonverbal reasoning skills, and working memory. In the Norwegian study, results showed the average IQ score increased about 3% for men born between 1962 and 1975, from 99.5 to 102.3. But the scores began dropping for men born after 1975. By 1989, the average IQ score had returned to 99.4. The study is related to something known as the Flynn effect. This is the idea that if the same IQ tests are given to people born at different points in time, the scores will generally rise. Ole Rajaberg is with the Frisch Center and was a lead researcher on the study. He told VOA the Flynn effect showed a clear increase in IQ scores during the 20th century throughout the Western world. Researchers found the IQ increases during this time period happened too fast to be related to genetics. They said the higher scores were instead caused by environmental factors. Among possible factors were better teaching and learning methods, improvements in test-taking skills, and healthier eating. Rajaberg said that in the new study, he wanted to examine possible causes for the steady drop in IQ scores. To rule out genetics, he attempted to find similarities between brothers.
Because on average, the genes that the firstborn and the secondborn and the thirdborn get, they will be relatively similar. There's no reason to expect that one sibling gets better genes just because he's the first or the second child.
He concluded that external factors probably influenced the scores more than genetics. However, he added that the study did not provide any information about specific kinds of environmental causes for the lower IQ scores. But, he said, researchers are considering a number of theories.
It may be due to changes in the educational system, or that it reflects a change in the media environment. If people used to read books more, but now they're watching television more or going on the internet more.
Rajaberg looks forward to results of additional studies that can support his findings. He says more research is needed to help explain all the reasons behind changes in IQ scores.
It's difficult to compare the results across time and whether it actually reflects a change in a sort of underlying intelligence or whether it reflects differences in how we have been trained to use our intelligence to solve different kinds of tasks.
In any case, Rajaberg says he believes the reasoning and critical thinking skills measured by intelligence tests will always be important. He notes that humans will still need to process information even as technology and artificial intelligence become a bigger part of people's lives. You have to be able to reason your way through the world as you live it, he said. And I don't think these skills are going to lose their relevance. But the way they are relevant might change. I'm Brian Lynn.
An early penalty goal by Shinji Kagawa helped lead Japan to a surprising 2-1 win over Colombia in the 2018 FIFA World Cup on Tuesday. The victory marks the first time an Asian team has beaten a South American team in a World Cup match. Soon after the match began, Yuya Osako of Japan won a bouncing ball to begin a series of actions that led to a penalty. Colombia's Carlos Sanchez received a red card for blocking Kagawa's shot on goal with his extended right arm. Japan took a 1-0 lead after Kagawa scored on the resulting penalty kick. Colombia had to play with 10 men for the rest of the match against Japan's 11. They evened the score late in the first half on a rolling free kick by Juan Quintero. But Osako scored the second goal for Japan with a header from a corner kick. Japan became the latest team to pull off an upset at the World Cup. The team joins Mexico, Switzerland, and Iceland in earning surprising results. The score was especially unexpected because Japan had changed coaches shortly before the tournament. And no Asian team had ever defeated a South American team in 17 World Cup meetings. Colombia defeated Japan 4-1 when the teams played in Brazil 4 years ago.
The ducks and geese at a lake in London's Hyde Park have a new neighbor, a floating structure of 7,506 barrels in the colors of red, mauve, and blue. The floating structure, called the London Mastaba, is the latest creation of Christo. He is the Bulgarian artist who wrapped Berlin's historic Reichstag building in silver, let people walk on water with the floating piers in Italy, and decorated New York's Central Park with colorful cloth gates. Christo's latest work rises 20 meters above the surface of the park's Serpentine Lake. The artwork weighs nearly 600,000 kilograms. The colors were chosen to go with the green grass and gray-blue sky of London. It was inspired by ancient Mesopotamian benches and Egyptian tombs. Mastaba is the Arabic word for bench. Christo and his late partner, Jean-Claude, first dreamed of a floating mastaba in 1967. They planned it for Lake Michigan in the United States. 50 years later, it has finally arisen in London. The artist has been planning an even bigger version, a mastaba in the Abu Dhabi desert. It would be made from 410,000 barrels and rise 150 meters to become the largest sculpture in the world. Like Christo's other works, the London mastaba is temporary. It will float on the lake until September 23rd. The sculpture will then be torn down, and all the barrels will be recycled. Lucia Halpern of Hyde Park watched the work being built over 2 months. She said her dog Coco was a fan because it keeps the ducks away and she can go in the water. But she declared herself a bit disappointed by the structure. "The only thing I find beautiful about it is the reflection in the water," she said. "Maybe that's the point. It's quite pretty when it gets the light and puts these magenta and pink colors on the water." I'm Katie Weaver.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. The election of Herbert Hoover in 1928 made Americans more hopeful than ever about their future. Hoover seemed to have just the right experience to lead the nation to more economic progress. He was an engineer and businessman who had served in the government as Commerce Secretary. He understood economics and had faith in the future of private business. On a rainy day in March of 1929, Hoover rode down Pennsylvania Avenue in Washington to become the new president. "I have no fears for the future of our country," he told the cheering crowd. "It is bright with hope." Faith Lapidus and Bob Doty tell more about the Republican administration of Herbert Hoover.
The clearest evidence of the public's faith in the economy is the stock market. And the New York Stock Exchange reacted to the new president with a wild increase in prices. During the months after Hoover's election, prices generally rose like a rocket. Stocks valued at $100 climbed to $200, then $300, $400. Men and women made huge amounts of money overnight. Publications and economic experts advised Americans to buy stocks before prices went even higher. Time and again, people heard how rich they could become if they found and bought stocks for companies growing into industrial giants. "Never sell the United States short," said one publication. Another just said, "Everybody ought to be rich."
A number of economic experts worried about the sharp increase in stock prices that followed Hoover's election. The president himself urged stock market officials to make trading more honest and safe. And he approved a move by the Federal Reserve Board to increase the interest charged to banks. However, both efforts failed to stop the growing number of Americans who were spending their money wildly on stocks. Some experts pointed to danger signs in the economy during the summer of 1929. The number of houses being built was dropping. Industries were reducing the amount of products that they held in their factories. The rate of growth in spending by average Americans was falling sharply. And industrial production, employment, and prices were down. These experts warned that the American economy was just not strong enough to support such rapid growth in stock prices. They said there was no real value behind many of the high prices. They said a stock price could not increase 4 times while a company's sales stayed the same. They said the high prices were built on foolish dreams of wealth, not real value.
But the prices went still higher. Buyers fought with each other to pay more and more for company stocks. The average price of all stocks almost doubled in just 1 year. It seemed everybody was buying stocks, even people with little money or economic training. A clothing salesman got advice from a stock trader visiting his store and made $200,000. A nurse learned of a good company from someone in the hospital. She made $30,000. There were thousands of such stories. By early September, the stock market reached its high point of the past 18 months. Shares of the Westinghouse Company had climbed from $91 to $313. The Anaconda Copper Company had risen from $54 to $162. Union Carbide jumped from $145 to $413. Life was like a dream, but like any dream, it could not last forever.
In September 1929, stock prices stopped rising. During the next month and a half, stock prices fell, but only slowly. Then, suddenly, at the end of October, the market crashed. Prices dropped wildly. Leading stocks fell $5, $10, $20 in a single day. Everyone tried to sell their stocks, but no one was buying. Fear washed across the stock market. People were losing money even faster than they had made it.
The stock market collapsed on Thursday, October 24th, 1929. People remember the day as Black Thursday, the day the dreams ended. The day began with a wave of selling. People from across the country sent messages to their stock traders in New York. All the messages said the same thing. Sell! Sell the stocks at any price possible! But no one was buying. And so down the prices came. The value of stock for the Montgomery Ward store dropped from $83 to $50 in a single day. The RCA Radio Corporation fell from $68 to $44, down $24 in just a few hours. Down the stocks fell, lower and lower. Several of the country's leading bankers met to discuss ways to stop the disaster. They agreed to buy stocks in large amounts to stop the wave of selling. The bankers moved quickly, and for 2 days, prices held steady. But then, like snow falling down the side of a mountain, the stocks dropped again. Prices went to amazingly low levels. One business newspaper said simply, "The present week has witnessed the greatest stock market disaster of all time."
The stock market crash ruined thousands of Americans. In a few short weeks, traders lost $30 billion, an amount almost as great as all the money the United States had spent in World War I. Some businessmen could not accept what had happened. They jumped from the tops of buildings and killed themselves. In fact, one popular joke of the time said that hotel owners had to ask people if they wanted rooms for sleeping or jumping. But the stock market crash was nothing to laugh about. It destroyed much of the money that Americans had saved. Even worse, it caused millions of people to worry and lose faith in the economy. They were not sure what to expect tomorrow. Business owners would not spend money for new factories or business operations. Instead, they decided to wait and see what would happen. This reduced production and caused more workers to lose their jobs. Fewer workers meant fewer people with money to buy goods. And fewer people buying goods meant less need for factories to produce. So it went. In short, economic disaster.
Why did the stock market crash? One reason, people had been paying too much for stocks. Everyone believed that prices would go higher and higher forever. People paid more for stocks than the stocks were worth. They hoped to sell the stocks at even higher prices. It was like a children's balloon that expands with air, blowing bigger and bigger until it bursts. But there were other important reasons. Industrial profits were too high and wages too low. 5% of the population owned 1/3 of all personal income. The average worker simply did not have enough money to buy enough of all the new goods that factories were producing. Another problem was that companies were not investing enough money in new factories and supplies. There were also problems with the rules of the stock market itself. People were allowed to buy stocks when they did not have the money to do so.
Several government economic policies also helped cause the stock market crash of 1929. Government tax policies made the rich richer and the poor poorer. And the government did little to control the national money supply, even when the economy faced disaster. The stock market crash marked the beginning of the Great Depression, a long, slow, painful fall to the worst economic crisis in American history. The Depression would bring suffering to millions of people. It would cause major political changes, and it would be a major force in creating the conditions that led to World War II.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.